This is 1988 Tops, where every card has a story to tell. Your hosts are David McKellis and Matt Kuzma. Let's play ball. Welcome back to 1988 Tops. David, what's our card for this week?
Our card this week is card 633, Barry Lyons, catcher for the New York Mets.
Before we get to Barry, we have some follow-up from last week's episode about Donnie Moore.
In the Donnie Moore episode, we discussed Donnie's role in a 23-22 game between the Phillies and Cubs. Donnie was a relief pitcher, and he did something in that game that no relief pitcher in the history of baseball, according to my StatHead search, has ever done. He came in the first inning in relief, so that shows you what kind of shape the Cubs were in in the first inning. There was only one out, and he was already down 6-0. In the bottom of that inning, he hit a triple, and someone on Facebook said, has it ever happened before that a relief pitcher hit a triple in the first inning? And so I looked up on StatHead and was able to find all 15 instances of a pitcher hitting a triple in the first inning. I looked at every single one of them, and Donnie was the only relief pitcher to do so. So that was a unique in history, maybe will never be done again unless Shohei Ohtani does it. But I think when he is batting, he is listed as a DH. So I don't think he will be listed as a pitcher. So this is perhaps a thing that will never happen again. One interesting note from that, aside from it being unique in baseball history, of the 15 times that this happened, a couple other names of note were Ralph Branca and Charlie Root, two guys who gave up other notable home runs. Ralph Branca gave up Bobby Thompson's shot heard around the world. Charlie Root gave up Babe Ruth's called shot at Wrigley Field. So between Donnie, Ralph Branca, Charlie Root, three of the 15 first inning triple hitting pitchers, three of them also had notable home runs that they conceded.
An amazing use of StatHead, so well done there. And we also had some follow-up on Mike Gator Greenwell.
Thank you to Jeff Snyder, Snydog on Twitter, who sent a note on Mike Greenwell and said, in 1988, and as we recall, Mike Greenwell, let's do some sound effects here for the Wayback Machine. Mike Greenwell once, in a touching story, as a child, caught George Brett's can of chaw. And Greenwell himself picked up chewing tobacco, but in 1988, he quit. And then he went into a slump. And to break his slump, he went back to tobacco. Snydog sent a clip from a newspaper around the time, a screenshot of that article. It turns out that the same day that he went back to chewing tobacco, he hit for the cycle.
Don't ever quit, kids. Get started early and don't ever give up.
And Jeff sent one more note on Greenwell, and that is that Greenwell's nephew is Joey Tardoslavich, who played parts of three seasons with Atlanta. Joey Tardoslavich, his mother is Mike Greenwell's sister, and so he's got an uncle who's a Red Sox legend, but Joey grew up influenced by his dad and was a Yankees fan. Must be heartbreaking for Gator, but thank you to Snydog for the always informative follow-up.
Now let's get to this week's card in Barry Lyons. And why are we talking about Barry today?
We have only talked about four Mets. I recently confirmed with famed Mets fan, friend of the show, Mark Simon, that he's going to join us again soon to talk about a big name Met. Maybe one who had a strained relationship with Cosmo Kramer. But we're still way behind. We've only talked about four Mets. We got to catch up. I think we got some teams that we've talked about eight or nine guys on. The Mets are way behind. So I figured I would pick somebody who had a relatively short career. And so we picked Barry Lyons, who had an interesting career. He was on that 86 Mets team very briefly, but over seven seasons, he played 250 games in the majors. In retirement, he has a story of survival and redemption. There's a Sabre bio about Barry by Leslie Heafy, who wrote the Julio Franco bio. I'm not sure if back when we recorded the Julio Franco episode, we were even using Sabre bios. The internet was new back then. But thank you, Leslie, for your work and for guiding us through this Barry Lyons episode.
Let's go to the front of 633, and we see a very good-looking card. We've got Barry Lyons in his catcher's gear. The mask is off. It looks like there is going to be a play at the plate. Someone is throwing the ball. You can see the ball in the very top right corner, speeding right toward his glove. I'm imagining there's, you know, someone from the Phillies or something in a preseason game about to slide in at home.
He has taken up a lot of this card, fully stretched, calling for the ball, making himself a big target. Good action shot. Got a big chest protector. You can see the pinstripes. I don't know what's going on behind him. See somebody in a large white shirt.
Could be the back of a hot dog vendor, maybe.
Yeah, somebody just came from the hospital.
I can't tell if this is at Shea Stadium.
There are a lot of Mets hats in the background. I bet Mark Simon will weigh in and let us know.
I see short sleeves with arms crossed across people's chests, which seems like a strange stance for fans to be. If there's about to be a play at the plate, I would be leaning forward in my seat, honestly.
You bought the whole seat, but you're only going to use the edge of it. Mets baseball.
We will leave it to the imagination of the card holder if the runner is out or safe. But now let's go to the back of 633. And we have Barry Lyons, catcher, height 6'1", weight 205, right-handed batter and thrower, drafted by the Mets in the 15th round of 1982, born June 3rd of 1960 in Biloxi, Mississippi, with a home in Biloxi, Mississippi.
This Barry Lyons is not the Barry Lyons who played midfield for Nottingham Forest in the 1960s, 1970s. No relation there. That Barry Lyons was born well before this one. One other Lyons who was born on the exact same day was Steve Lyons. Same day, same year, but born on opposite sides of the country. No relation that I could find. Steve Lyons also in this set. Born in Tacoma, Washington. Barry Lyons was born in Biloxi, Mississippi. Biloxi settled by the French in 1699. The name in French was, I'm not entirely sure how to pronounce this in all français, Biloxi. Looks more Italian. B-I-L-O-C-C-I, which was a transliteration of the local Native American tribe, the Biloxi people, spelled with an X. In 1960, it was a city of 44,000, now slightly larger, around 50,000. In the year of Barry's birth, there was a race riot stemming from protests against segregated beaches in the city, as Biloxi is a city on the Gulf of Mexico, a lot of beaches there. And in the ensuing riots, there were 10 people killed in those riots, one of the more notable race riots in Mississippi in the 1960s. There's a song by Jesse Winchester about Biloxi, also covered by Jimmy Buffett and others. The play Biloxi Blues by Neil Simon, later a movie starring Matthew Broderick, was about the lives of Army recruits at Keesler Field during World War II. In more recent times, the city has multiple casinos that are built along the Gulf Coast, and it was heavily damaged during multiple hurricanes, but significantly during Hurricane Katrina. Barry is the youngest of four kids born to Kenneth and Jermaine. His older brothers were all athletes. His oldest brother, Kenny, was the quarterback at Ole Miss, and he followed Archie Manning. So there were big things expected of Kenny Lyons, and he ended up signing with the Cowboys, but injuries that were discovered during his physical ended his football career before it started. Another brother, Tommy, was drafted by Cleveland in the 18th round, but never played for the organization. Because Kenneth Lyons, the elder, didn't get a chance to finish college, he wanted all of his kids to go and to finish college, even though they were all great athletes. And so Tommy, instead of going pro in baseball, went to Ole Miss, and then injuries in college ended his baseball days. The closest brother to Barry was Pat, and Pat also played baseball and football. He went to Morehead State University in Kentucky on a scholarship. Barry, the youngest of four, a talented athlete. He wanted to be a baseball player from a young age. In sixth grade, he wrote an essay that said his career goal was to be a professional ball player. He played baseball and football at first Notre Dame High School and then transferred to Biloxi High for his junior and senior year. On the football field, he was named Most Valuable Offensive Lineman in 1977. And on the baseball field, he led his team to a state championship and was named League MVP in both 1977 and 78.
He was scouted by colleges for both baseball and football and was offered a scholarship for both sports at Delta State University in Cleveland, Mississippi, which is 5 hours north of Biloxi. And he was given permission to take spring football training off to play baseball. But then Coach Boo Ferris convinced Barry he should focus full-time on baseball. Ferris should know he was a two-time 20-game winner for the Red Sox in the 1940s, then was the Red Sox pitching coach before returning home to Mississippi to coach at Delta State. And Barry went with it. He had a great career at Delta State. They're a Division II team that played about half its games against Division I teams, and they regularly defeated teams such as Ole Miss, Mississippi State, Southern Miss, and Alabama. Barry had a very successful college career. He was All-Gulf, South Conference, all four seasons. He was drafted in the 25th round by the Tigers in 1981, but he wanted to finish his degree and play his senior season as Dad had requested, and figured he would probably get a higher draft spot.
So in that senior season, he helped the Statesmen to the Division II World Series. They lost in the semifinal, finishing third overall. For that final year, he was named to the D2 All-America second team, and he was the Mississippi College Baseball Player of the Year, an award that is now named for his coach, Coach Boo Ferris. He was also an academic All-American three times, graduated with honors with a degree in business administration, and he set Delta State career records in home runs with 36 and RBIs with 184. And for that successful senior season, he earned himself this way to the clubhouse.
And that is that Barry signed as a 15th round draft selection with the New York Mets, June 16th, 1982, by scout Joe Mason.
He was picked in the 15th round, 370th overall. The last pick of that 15th round was the only other guy in the 15th to make the big leagues. And he was just a high school third baseman named Jose Canseco. Barry signed a $1,500 signing bonus, and he said that he got paid $650 a month to head to the minor leagues. The scout who signed him, Joe Mason, is an Alabama scouting legend. He served in the Navy and did a tour of duty in Vietnam, then became a coach for Auburn University Montgomery before joining Milwaukee as a scout, then joined the Mets in 1980, covering the five southeastern states and Australia. He served with the Mets until 1997. He signed Barry, Dave Magadan, Terrence Long, then joined the Red Sox for 6 years, signing Jonathan Papelbon, and served there until 2004. Since then, he has been with the Brewers and Diamondbacks, and in 2016, he was inducted into the Professional Baseball Scouts Hall of Fame.
Barry signed his contract and was sent to Shelby, North Carolina for A-ball, where he hit .281, four homers and 46 RBIs, and then spent most of 1983 at Columbia. In 92 games, he hit near .300, earning a move to Lynchburg for a couple of games, and then spent all of 1984 at Lynchburg playing really well, .316, 12 homers and 87 RBIs. He was the team captain and the Carolina League MVP, and he really thought that in no time he would be in the big leagues. But in December 1984, Barry got some bad news.
He was at his friend's house watching Monday Night Football. Some news crawled across the bottom of the screen. Terrible news. The Mets had traded away Floyd Yeomans.
No!
I can't believe it. Maybe more importantly in that trade, they had acquired seven-time All-Star Gary Carter. Barry knew at this point he was always going to be a backup if he stayed in New York. And he was behind Ed Hearn, who was at AAA at this point. So he had a little ways to go to even get to the big leagues to be the backup. But he also knew with Gary Carter penciled in, it was going to be impossible for him to ever be the full-time starter.
And at 7 feet tall, if you're behind Ed Hearn, you're not seeing anything.
That's true.
So 1985, he starts the season at AA Jackson, not feeling optimistic about his chances. Ed Hearn was still in front of him in the minor league pecking order at AAA. But Lyons had another great season. He led Jackson to the Texas League Championship, hitting .308, knocking in 108 runs, and was named the New York Mets Minor League Player of the Year. He only walked 25 times, which was a bit of a weakness in his game that he would never be a big on-base percentage guy.
He started 1986 at AAA Tidewater. He played really well, hitting .295 on the year. He got a short call-up in April, made his Major League debut on the 19th of April, and went 0-for-3 against the Phillies, but drove in a run on an infield grounder. He played a couple times in May, a couple games in June. He He went 0 for 9 at the plate at the big league level. But when he was back in AAA, he got hit by a pitch that broke a bone in his wrist and ended his season. It was really unfortunate timing because of that injury, and he had already been called up. He was maybe going to get a little bit more playing time. Then he gets injured. Ed Hearn ends up filling in the bulk of the backup innings for Gary Carter when Carter missed time in August due to injury. Barry didn't make the playoff roster, but he did receive a World Series ring for the Mets' victory.
In 1987, the Mets traded away Ed Hearn for David Cohn, opening up the backup spot for Barry. And he spent 1987 and 88 as Gary Carter's backup, finally getting some regular playing time. He played in 53 games in 1987 and then 50 games in 1988. On Easter Sunday, 1987, however, Barry earned a status as an enemy of the best fans in baseball when he had an unfortunate incident at Busch Stadium.
Two nights prior, John Tudor had pitched, so he's on the bench in Busch Stadium. In the third inning, Jack Clark hits a pop-up toward the dugout. Lyons, as the catcher, is chasing the ball down. He goes barreling into the dugout. He falls into John Tudor, breaking the lefty's tibia below the knee, and Tudor would miss all of May, June, and July. Lyons was not injured. Cardinals second baseman Tommy Herr said the injury never should have happened. He said, "I was on the top step yelling, 'No play, no play.' He was coming full tilt. Everybody was yelling at him to stop." If you watch the video, Lyons is going hard. He's not playing at home, so there's maybe a little bit of unfamiliarity with the territory, but he's running full speed, and I think he runs down some steps, maybe just clear into the dugout over the steps. I don't know. He didn't even try to stop.
He was running and sliding full speed into the dugout, going down the steps. That's very dangerous. If he hadn't have fallen into the dugout, if there had been a railing there, he probably would have wrecked himself slamming into the railing. He's very, very lucky that he wasn't injured.
I don't know if it's better or worse for there to not be a railing, because he must have gone flying down those stairs. I think Barry was playing hard, trying to get the ball. I couldn't even tell from this video where the ball is, how far off he was. Was he 20 feet away from it and still running into the dugout? Not great. I think fans and Tommy Herr blamed Barry for this injury, and with the severity of the injury and the importance of John Tudor and how good he could have been on his best days, it was a huge injury for the Cardinals and unfortunate incident for John Tudor. Also during this season, Barry kept another legendary starting pitcher in retirement with a performance in a simulated game against Tom Seaver.
The stakes not as high on this one, but making Hall of Fame news.
Seaver was thinking about a comeback, so he's pitching to some backup Mets players in simulated games. Barry hit two line shots and then got a knockdown pitch under his chin. The next pitch Seaver threw, Barry hit a home run. And then he said he got three more hits and went 6 for 6 off of Tom Seaver. The next day, Seaver announced his retirement. The media asked Seaver who was the toughest batter he had faced in his career. And Barry said, "I think he was joking when he said Barry Lyons."
So I ended a Hall of Famer's career, Lyons said. That got me some recognition. So adding insult to injury. Great job, Barry Lyons. On the year in 1987, against pitchers not named Tom Seaver, he hit .254 with 4 homers and an OPS plus of 86. In 1988, he hit .231, walking only 3 times in nearly 100 plate appearances. He also had a couple memorable moments.
He caught David Cohn's 2-hit shutout, which was a no-hitter through 7 2/3 innings. This would have been the first no-hitter in Mets history. Cohn and Barry Lyons were good friends. They at one time shared an attic apartment in Queens. Barry said they were an odd couple, pitcher and catcher. Cohn was a neat freak and Barry was a slob, but the two got along very well. Barry also had a game against the Cubs where he had a 2-run triple in a 3-1 win. Barry wanted to play every day, but he knew his role at this point was a backup, saying after that Cubs performance, "The chances have been few and far between, but when I do get a chance, I'm going to give it my best. Tonight was very special for me."
1989 would be Gary Carter's last year with the Mets, giving Barry more opportunities. He played 79 games, a career high, covering for Carter, who dealt with injury and only appeared in 50 games himself. Barry hit 247 with three homers and a career-high 27 RBIs, career-high 13 doubles, and 11 walks. It was an OPS plus of 82. When Carter signed with the Giants in the offseason, Barry was hoping to earn the starting spot in 1990 and hit over 500 in spring training.
But then he dealt with some injuries. He wasn't hitting well, hitting only 238, and he was sent to the minors. He was not only dealing with physical injuries, but also he was diagnosed with depression. He was sent to the minors to recover from those injuries and get his mind right. But no one was treating mental health seriously at the time, and he was struggling with the pressure of playing in New York. He said, "I had fear and doubt. That's tough. I didn't hit at all, and it was the most difficult time in my life as far as baseball is concerned." It also didn't help that the media had this pressure on him to replace Gary Carter, and he couldn't hit like Gary Carter could hit. And finally, in September, he was released by the Mets. He signed with the Dodgers, playing three games, and at this point, he got married, had medication for his depression, and life was going okay.
But then in 1991, the Dodgers signed Gary Carter. So Barry was once again behind the kid in the roster, only made 9 appearances for the Dodgers that year, was granted free agency, and signed with the Angels and played a few games for them. Also spent some time with their AAA club in Edmonton.
The next 3 seasons, he was a AAA catcher for Houston, St. Louis, Cincinnati. He played well for all those teams, but never earned a call-up. There were always other catchers ahead of him. In 1995, at 35 years old, he signs with the White Sox, initially playing at AAA. He earns a call-up and was pretty good in 27 games. A note from the 88 Tops blog and our friend Andy at High Heat Stats: he posted on the Barry Lyons page that Lyons saved one of his best career games for one of his last career games. In his 4th-to-last game in the major leagues, Lyons hit a 3-run homer and had RBIs on a single and a ground out for the White Sox. And in that season, Barry hit a career-high 266, and in only 64 at-bats, he had a career-high 5 home runs. So a pretty good 27-game stretch for the White Sox, but a 35-year-old catcher, they didn't really have much reason to keep him around. In 1996, he went to spring training with the Rangers, and then he said the phone quit ringing. But what's interesting is Barry at this point had an apartment in Nashville, and he also had a home in Biloxi. So he finishes spring training with the Rangers, goes to Nashville, a couple weeks later goes to Biloxi, and he sees on the answering machine there was a message from the Cincinnati Reds that they were interested in signing him. But at that point, it was too late. The season was already going. So it wasn't that the phone had quit ringing entirely, just not the phone that he was checking.
Oh, man. Well, closing the book on Barry Lyons, 7 seasons in the major leagues, 253 games, batting average of 239, which is an OPS plus of 78, 15 home runs, 89 RBIs, and 26 doubles. How about in retirement?
Barry spent some time as a minor league coach and manager for various different teams in Nashville and then with the Charleston, West Virginia Alley Cats. He worked for a little while in the broadcast booth for the Nashville Sounds. He operated the Barry Lyons Baseball Academy, providing training, camps, clinics, lessons for over 25 years. He and his wife had a daughter, and they moved back to Biloxi in the early 2000s. He wanted to get a minor league team going there, and he also went back home to take care of his parents. Then in 2005, everything fell apart. Hurricane Katrina was aimed for Biloxi. Barry and his family decided that they were going to just try to ride out the storm in their home. They were able to check Barry's mother into a hospital as she was bedridden, but his father, Kenneth, was 80 and had Alzheimer's, and they couldn't get him into a hospital. So in this home, you have Barry, his wife, Marcia, and a 7-year-old daughter, Danielle, and his 80-year-old father. After the storm hit, Barry looks outside, and the house is surrounded by water. Trees are falling down. Water is rushing into the house, and they had to get out. They went to a neighbor's house who had evacuated. It was on higher ground, and they thought it might be safer, but that house was flooding, and it sounded like the roof would tear off in the storm. So Barry and his family hid for hours in a boat on a trailer under a tarp as the rains continued. When it finally stopped and Barry had time to survey the damage, his house was totally destroyed. A tree had crushed the roof. There was 9 feet of water inside the house. Memorabilia from his career was destroyed or lost, including that World Series ring. His baseball academy was also lost. The family had to live in a FEMA trailer on his parents' property, and the months after Katrina were difficult. Barry's brother, Pat, who he had been closest with, had fallen into a deep depression even before Katrina hit, and afterwards he died by suicide. Barry himself started drinking heavily and using painkillers to cope with both his situation and the sadness of losing his brother. All of this contributed to the end of his marriage, and that just compounded his issues. After Katrina, his friend David Cohn would check in on him, and he said you could see him progressively start to drink more and more, see him struggle with what to do. And Cohn said, it looked to me like he got sicker and sicker. He didn't look well. He bottomed out, and finally Barry realized that he had reached rock bottom. And at that point, something called the Baseball Assistance Team stepped in. And this is a charity that was formed in 1986 in a partnership between the MLBPA and Major League Baseball to confidentially help members of the baseball family who were in need of assistance and who had nowhere else to turn. BAT, as it's known, provides stipends to former players and their families. And in Barry's case, he had no job, no income, and a substance abuse problem. So BAT helped cover some of his expenses, paid for treatment with a 90-day stay at Home of Grace, a Mississippi-based addiction recovery program. And so now, Barry is still in Biloxi when he's not coaching in Lexington, Kentucky. He has remarried and remains free from his addictions. His dream of baseball in Biloxi came true in 2015 when the Brewers' AA affiliate, the Biloxi Shuckers, came to town. And that July, the team honored Barry with his own day. In 2017, he was officially named a team ambassador. And then even more recently, in July of 2022, he was inducted into the Mississippi Sports Hall of Fame. And in late 2022, his nephew, Nathan, purchased the minor league Lexington Legends in Lexington, Kentucky. And Barry was hired as the manager. This team was recently renamed the Counter Clocks, which is a weird name, but it pays tribute to the state's and to Lexington's horse racing fame. According to the team, horse racing, when it was run in England, was run clockwise. And then in the United States, they switched it to run counterclockwise on dirt. I don't quite understand this quote from Nathan Lyons. So the players run the bases first, second, third, and home counterclockwise. And you also run on dirt, just like horse races.
It was revolutionary.
So 2023 was the first year of the counterclocks, and Barry is their manager.
What a story, and what a great ending, too. So now that we've looked at Barry Lyons a little bit more, what do we think about him?
Barry has a great story of redemption after a somewhat typical story for a backup catcher. But in his case, he was blocked by a Hall of Famer multiple times. Just seemed like everywhere he turned, Gary Carter is stepping in. But he had a successful career, 7 seasons in the major leagues, multiple teams wanting him as a good professional, even at the AAA level, to work with young pitchers. And when he was done with his career and moved back to care for his family and to try to bring baseball back to his home, unfortunately, that also put him in the path of Katrina, which put him in a position where he was going to need help. Thankfully, he got that help after the storm and after his addictions and his life fell apart. And now he speaks in support of the BAT program, helps with fundraising, and is able to tell his story and encourage people to contribute to that program. He's turned it around, brought baseball to Biloxi, and is back in coaching with that new team, that newly named team. They just finished the first half of the 2023 season with a 31-32 record, so right around 500. Barry called his college coach, Boo Ferris, his father figure, a guy who had made it to the big time and then returned to his roots to coach at a small school and bring that big league mentality to players who maybe wouldn't necessarily have that opportunity. And Barry is doing the same. I'm glad that he's able to pass along his experience both on the field and off the field, and the good and the bad, and share that with players in the Atlantic League.
definitely. I think David also shows that programs like the baseball assistance team are such a good idea, that just because an athlete makes a bunch of money in their 20s and 30s, it doesn't mean that they're set for life. Lots of things in life can happen to them, and they need support, and we all need support. And so it seems like a really good idea that Major League Baseball has a program like that in place, and glad that Barry was able to find some help during that tough time. Well, a really great story, and so thank you very much for that. And thank you to you at home. You know, you should go check your answering machine and see if there's a good message waiting on there. Tell us all about it on Twitter. We're at Tops1988. Thanks a lot, and we'll see you next week.